We started the show, though, BT, talking about the Giants, and just it's the same old story with the New York Giants here. And the only thing that's left to be seen from my perspective, I know I'm skipping over a lot from the game yesterday, would be Dable and Jackson Dart together. That's really it, because we've seen it now with Daniel Jones, and then you see Jones have success in week one with the Colts. We saw it with Saquon Barkley. When he left, he becomes the MVP of the league, and Brian Dable couldn't make anything of it. Now it's a new quarterback with Russell Wilson, and again, the Giants make it seem impossible to put the ball in the end zone. So offensive line issues, they can't run the football, too many drops, scheme, whatever you want to say, poor quarterback. I'm not even blaming it all on Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. It can't be everybody but Brian Dable. He's the one constant. For me, he's the biggest focal point of the game from yesterday.
What do the Giants do well? Like, if you sit here and just have an intelligent, you know, non-biased football conversation, what can we objectively state that they do well?
Or have done well under Brian Dable?
Yeah, that too, to kind of fit where you're. Very, very little. I mean, they don't have a passing game. I mean, there's nothing vertical. They don't run the ball incredibly well. They definitely don't stop the run. What we talked about all year was, and one of the things that I thought would change a little bit was that I thought that Russ would be competent, more so, and better than Jones was a year ago, and some of the other quarterbacks that they had, Locke and obviously DeVito, whatever. And, you know, he would put a couple of touchdowns on the board here, because I assumed Andrew Thomas was going to play. And I didn't think that Wilson would be phenomenal, but at least with a little bit of a lead, or at least being within shouting distance, I thought it would enable and unlock the Giants' best asset, which at this point, until proven otherwise, is their only asset, the pass rush. But that has been minimized because they never have a lead, etc. So that's all tied into one big, messy subplot that really doesn't give you a lot of reason to hope. Having said that, and this is for a middle-of-the-week thing, I think it's going to change a little bit this week against Dallas, but until it does, it hasn't changed.
Yeah, and it's only 1 week, so this season in isolation, this is not just, oh my God, the Giants are the worst team ever because they only scored 6 points against Washington. It's the culmination of multiple years with the same offense from an offensive head coach with now multiple quarterbacks. So I don't know what's got to change here before we realize that Dable's the problem. But before we definitively say he isn't it, I do want to see what happens with Jackson Dart. I would not give up hope about the defense. I thought there were some signs. Look, Jaden Daniels is going to make most defenses look bad. Yep. So I thought there were some positives with the Giants defense. I wouldn't go over the top saying they're an awful football team just yet. The frustration comes from the team, again, not being competitive and not moving the football or scoring enough points to truly be competitive in a back-and-forth game like we saw with the Jets.
And the reason why it feels like deeper today is because we talked all summer in glowing terms about the positivity and like the Giant vibes and what was going on at camp, and it smelled a little different, it felt a little different, it tasted a little different. And then you sit down, you know, 103, the ball's up in the air, game starts, and you're eating the same meal.
It's the exact same, like I was going to say, bologna and cheese sandwich, but I don't want to be disparaging to bologna and cheese.
I haven't had bologna in a long time. You get bologna with some good mustard on a little rye, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I would go bologna and American cheese, a little mayo on white
bread. You go mayo on the bologna.
Yeah, that was old school, yeah. I mean, now I probably just have it plain. But anyway, yeah, I don't want to be disrespectful to that kind of sandwich because I like that sandwich. It's the same old stuff that you don't like the taste of it. Now, it doesn't mean it can't get better, to your point, in week two. The schedule's only going to get more difficult. Remember, too, these were winnable, quote-unquote, winnable games to a point where people were so excited, they were over the top saying that the Giants were going to win the first two games and beat the Commanders. As we got closer to the game, the reality hit me that they're just not even on the level of Washington. And because they played close with them last year, I think that gave a lot of us reason to think like, oh, you know what? They were close last year. They should be better this year. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, you saw the difference on the field. And it wasn't even like Washington played a great game. The Giants couldn't stop the run, can't run the football. Many, many issues there. And the hope is going to be, okay, well, Jackson Dart's going to be the savior at some point down the road.
He's going to play, and hopefully he looks good. Otherwise, it's going to be massive change. I'm sure you heard this coming in dry. Listen to Boomer and Gio. I don't know if everybody did. The Giants are the first team to not score a touchdown in three straight openers. You heard this, right?
No. I might have saw a graphic yesterday somewhere.
The Giants are the first team to not score a touchdown in three straight season openers since the Detroit Lions from 1940.
Yeah, I
remember. 1942.
Yeah.
1940.
That's ridiculous. I saw that, I think, on Football Night in America last night that they had that. So that was the bad from our two teams here in New York. The good even resulted resulted in a loss. But I think from a Jet fan perspective, and I certainly am not into moral victories, but I've said this before, I'm not judging Aaron Glenn and the Jets based on their win-loss record this year, which may sound crazy, but I'm thinking bigger picture. Now, Fields was terrific yesterday, and if he plays like that more often than not, they are going to win more games than I thought they could win. Mm-hmm. But I think everything else was in place. If not for a fumbled kickoff return, the Jets would have won that game. They should have won that game 99 out of 100 times. Okay, they lost it. It happens. But I thought they played a good, for the most part, smart, tough brand of football, and something that, as Aaron Glenn said, he wants the fan base to be proud of. If I'm a Jet fan, I'm proud of their effort in week one.
I was very proud, but it was also, you know, a tough way to end the game after all that, because there were so many ups, and I just thought they're going to find a way to win this. But I'm largely with you here. There's a lot. I don't need to spit it all back out. I mean, I told you what I thought about the game and what I liked. The thing that jumped out to me the most, I will reset this, is that it was very clear that the Jets were ready to play football, because the entire conversation during the, really from Aaron's press conference, where a lot of old Jets were there, and he had great demeanor and great conviction and great poise, to the press conferences during the summer, where he never took the cheese, never took the bait, very, very much in charge, the exact opposite of a few of his predecessors here. They had no penalties in the first half, and they just did things that the other Jet teams in recent years did not do at all. Put it this way. Say if you have a young child who struggles in math, all right? They're not a very good math. 70, I don't mean like high school, but young. And they're just fundamentally not getting the foundation of math. And they're bringing home 60s or 70s, unacceptable stuff, but they're young. And you get a tutor. And let's say the 67s suddenly turn into 79s. Well, I mean, 79s are not A's on the report card, but there's palpable progress, because then the next step would be a 79 can become an 85. And now you start getting in the B territory, and then if you keep working, you get in the A territory. So I kind of look at yesterday as a tough math test, or if you're not a good speller, whatever it might be, where the Jets, you know, they didn't get an A because they didn't win the game, didn't get a B because they didn't win the game, but there was so much evidence that what they're trying to change is there. And for me right now, today, it's enough.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. 888-808-1019, the number to call. David calling from Maplewood, New Jersey. What's up, David?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
What's up, Dave? How you doing, buddy?
I just wanted to throw in my two cents of the positives that I saw and the negatives that I saw from the Jets game.
Okay, Jets, go ahead.
First of all, I've been told for weeks on your station that Fields can't throw the ball. He threw the ball really well yesterday. I mean, I thought he was right on the money on most of his throws.
Yeah, I mean, if Justin Fields could do that the rest of the year, I mean, he's going to be in the MVP conversation. That's how well he played yesterday.
He made one throw to Rucker.
Offensive line, I thought, played very well also. And I thought the running game was good also. However, the secondary stinks.
Yeah, I don't like it.
They made a lot of mistakes. I mean, Rodgers looked like a ballerina out there getting, you know, the guys were so wide open, and they say that he can't run anymore. Meanwhile, he ran pretty good yesterday.
He didn't run. I thought he manipulated space fairly well, but no, he didn't run. He didn't run at all.
He still looks old, and thank you for the call, David. He still looks old and immobile to me. I mean, he can still sling it with the best of
His arm's still really good.
Yeah, and by the way, I thought a lot was made of that quote. It was misinterpreted, where somebody asked him, they played it on the morning show today, mm-hmm. but before that, like, people were just going nuts about it. Somebody asked him if it felt extra special to beat Aaron Glenn specifically because Glenn said he couldn't play anymore.
Yeah.
And instead of taking a direct shot at Aaron Glenn, he said, it feels good to beat anybody associated with the Jets. That's the right answer. And it was made out to be like Rodgers was ripping the Jets, saying, like, it feels good to beat anybody within the Jets organization.
How did you take it? I mean, that's how I took it, but it didn't bother me, because if I was Aaron Rodgers, I'd say the same thing that you sent me packing. You basically told me I wasn't good enough. So for him to take a shot at the entire Jets organization, I think he's certainly well within his right to do that.
But to me, it wasn't that shot.
What was it?
He was specifically asked about Aaron Glenn.
Yeah.
Did it feel extra special to beat him
because
of what he said to you? And he said, no, it feels good to beat anybody associated with the Jets. So he avoided...
Making it personal.
Correct.
Or personal.
And yet, it was taken in the context of it was personal.
I think it was personal. But I think he found a way to get separation... To show respect for a former player. It was definitely personal. There's no doubt it was personal against the Jets, and it should be.
Understood. It should be. But I'm saying it was made out to be that Rodgers was saying that specifically, like after the game, it felt great to beat anybody associated with the Jets organization. That's not what happened. He was asked if it felt good to beat Aaron Glenn specifically. He avoided that, taking the high road, just saying, I don't care. Basically, I'm paraphrasing. I don't care who you are. It feels good to beat anybody associated with the Jets organization. Not, ha-ha, Jets. He let everybody know about it, and then he followed up with the, yeah, well, okay, go ahead. Play this whole, do you have the question too? Go ahead, play this.
Beating him, is there significance in that, since he basically told you to your face that he didn't think you were right for that team?
Yes, that's what he did.
So there's significance in beating him for you?
I was happy to beat everybody associated with the Jets.
Right. So to me, that's not taking the, you know what I mean? Going at the Jets.
I hear you. And by the way, he's calm. I think it's a good delivery. Yeah. I think well within his boundaries. I think he could have said other things that he didn't. But I think the other thing that he said was that I think, and I was kind of lumping that into as you were describing it, which is what jumped out to me more. He said, there's a lot of people here who didn't think I could play anymore.
Yeah, that's,
so there's a personalization to it, but there should be.
100%.
No problem with that.
100%. I'm just saying in that one quote, I think people took that out of context. But yeah, of course it was sweet for him.
It should
anyway,
be. What would you say? I'd say the same thing. Yeah. I'd probably go worse.
You have the other one too? Yeah, this go ahead. Play that one if you have.
I just wanted to have fun today. I mean, I was dreaming about the opportunity to step back on the field in the offseason and wondering how it would feel, and would the juices flow, and would it hit my competitive spirit. It was nice to win, especially, you know, hearing some of the cat calls out there.
This one, yeah.
And the boo birds. You know, I'm not sensitive about that. I expected that, you know, kind of like that. But there were probably people in the organization didn't think I could play anymore. So it was nice to remind those people I still can.
That one to me was the personal one.
That's what I had in my head. So to me, that is a proud warrior who is a titan of industry at his position, one of the best of all time, who doesn't think he was shown the proper respect as he was shown the door.
And
it's been motivation, and there you go.
I think both sides, Rodgers and the Jets, came out looking good yesterday. Rodgers proved that he could still play.
Yeah.
But the Jets also proved the Jets should have won the game. So Rodgers came out the winner, but he was fortunate to do so. It wasn't necessarily because of him. It was because of the fumble and because of the fortunate, you know, bounce that they got there with the DK Metcalf catch and because of the 60-yard kick. Rodgers, great. You know I love Rodgers. And I bet on them, but come on, that game did not play the way that many people thought. If you were a Steelers perspective and thinking Rodgers is going to come in here and light the Jets up, the game did not play that way. The Jets deserve to win that game. If you bet the Jets or pick the Jets, you deserve to win that clear. The Jets were the better team on the field yesterday.
Yeah, I think if you're sitting here saying that Aaron Rodgers was the reason why the Steelers won, I don't really feel that way either. It's not like he had, you know, a slew of like third and nines where he's threading the needle, these back-breaking drives. There were a couple of collapses in the secondary, a couple of missed tackles, guys falling. Steven should have picked them off if he didn't trip off the turf. And that turf, I mean, it's horrible, dude. No, I don't think anybody got hurt from the turf, I don't think. But you saw Justin Fields lose his footing, Stevens, couple of the Steelers. That stupid MetLife turf has got to be, though. It's one thing to have the worst stadium in the NFL, which we all know that we pretty much do. But to not even have functional turf, it really is a joke. I don't know why. And these guys wear an inch and a half spike. Like Tiki's talked about the different cleats that they put on based on the surface. It's an embarrassment. Every single week you watch, whether it's the Jets or the Giants playing at home, guys slipping and sliding like they're on a pond playing hockey in Canada. It's an embarrassment.
Missed opportunity for sure there with the Jets. Anyway, point is, the Jets played, to me, a game that you could be proud of from a Jet fan perspective. The Giants did the complete opposite of that yet again. Justin is calling from Mayapack. What's up, Justin?
Hey, boys. How we doing?
Good.
What's up, buddy?
So, long-time Giants fan. I'm kind of torn, right? So, yeah, Wilson didn't play a great game, but it wasn't all on him. Their defense was okay, but not what we expected. And the offense, I mean, I don't know if it's Dable. I don't know if it's Kafka. The play calling was suspect. It was tough. I don't want to put it all on Wilson, but I will say that I think you need to play Dart.
Already?
Yeah.
With that old line?
I do.
Risky.
I just think that, you know, I know it's risky. I know it's one of the things, but the kid looked like he's quarterback ready, NFL ready.
Based on what?
I know it's preseason. I know preseason. I know, Sal. I know what you're going to say based on preseason. But just Wilson yesterday looked lost. He looked scared. He was missing open receivers. I mean, I don't know.
Well, Justin, here's the thing. A couple times, and I thought the same thing. And then I watched the like a reel. I would just rewind a little bit and say, all right, he missed this guy by a couple of yards, as Justin said. But then when you see it again, you're like, his hand got hit, or his hand was not able to follow through because a defender, like, there were reasons why, I'm not saying every throw, but there were reasons why he was 17 for 37. Five drops doesn't help.
He was under duress all day long.
He was running for his life all day. I mean, I don't know what you expect. And for me to put Dart in, and I think this is what Justin was saying, like basically to try to save the season, that's the wrong motivation. It shouldn't be about saving the season. It should be about stabilizing the organization from a macro perspective. And I don't think you do that in week two with an offensive line that still stinks. I'm not putting Dart in yet.
No, but it was always going to be about Dart stabilizing the organization. Like anybody who thought that Russell Wilson and the Giants, or still thinks that Russell Wilson and the Giants are going to be a playoff team, to me, it's absurd. Like the hope would be that you could maybe, best case scenario, be on the fringe of a playoff spot, but that was never realistic. I always thought the path was going to be they're going to try with Russell Wilson as long as they could. When they're definitively done, whether it's week 12, week 13, whatever, decide to turn it over to Jackson Dart. Now we're already, it was actually in preseason before week one, it was Dart. Unless they, as an organization, really believe Dart is ready right now. It's not about winning games, about properly developing him. That's the only way out of this. That's it. It's Jackson Dart or bust. I hate to say that or put that on him, but that is where we're at. We've seen this head coach in this regime with the players they brought in. They aren't good enough. End of story. They haven't been good enough for years. There's been 3 years of evidence plus one game now. Certainly offensively. I'll still give the defense a chance here.
Yep.
So it's going to be about Jackson Dart. Is he going to be able to come in and elevate this offense to a point we haven't seen in years? Certainly under Brian Daboll. That, to me, is it. It's just a matter of when that's going to be the case.
And, you know, maybe if he plays yesterday, they don't score 6 points, but I don't think he does a ton more with that. But think about, just based on the online right now, think about what you just said about, like, this, and this is the slippery slope, then we won't know the answer. We could guess it. But let's say he starts week four, right? Because you just said the Giants should not start him unless they think that he's ready.
That's what I would agree
with that, right? But whenever he does get the call, is it because they think that he's ready or because they're trying to save their own asses?
It can't be because of that last part.
But we won't know. Yeah. Now, when we see him on the field, and if he looks really good, then that's evidence, okay, they went to him because they believe that he's ready. But that's not necessarily the answer that we're going to get. We don't know yet.
I don't believe it would be to save their own asses, but we don't know. You're right. Tyler is calling from Trumbull, Connecticut. What's up, Tyler?
Hey, what's up, boys? I called you last week after week three, the Giants lost, and I said, hey, I'm done watching the Giants. I'm going to go with my wife apple picking, pumpkin picking, and you guys killed me for it. You remember?
I remember.
Yeah, hey, guess what?
We would still kill you for it.
Yeah. Well, next week we're going to Target and sniffing candles. I am not watching another down of Giants football. I'm done.
I love sniffing the candles. I do that
myself. Hey, real quick. Hey, you can't start Jackson Dart behind this offensive line.
No way.
Russell Wilson's no world beater anymore, but he's still a Super Bowl winning quarterback.
Yeah. Well, Tyler, real quick, and we'll give you a chance to get a little bit more. Here's the problem.
Yeah.
And this is going to sound really callous. I don't mean it this way, but it's the reality of where the Giants are. The Giants don't care if Russell Wilson gets hurt. They care if Jackson Dart gets hurt.
And what are you going to do if Jackson Dart goes in there and gets sacked 12 times?
Well, that's why I'm not putting him in there with this offensive line. That's my point.
Right, but then... Then, and thank you for the call, Tyler.
Thanks,
enjoy the scents over at Target
candles
on Sunday.
That is, I'll tell you, once you sniff one, you want to sniff like 10 of them. They got the pumpkins and you get the Christmas scents. I do that all the time. Love candles.
Yeah, I don't mind the Christmas smelling ones. But I never in my life made a point to go to Target and sniff the candles. Certainly not on a football Sunday.
Giant fans are going to be sniffing glue soon if this doesn't keep up.
Here's the better.
Or if this does keep up.
Here's the better alternative to that. Just get DirecTV and watch a different football game.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
You can still hang
or make some bets, order some food, do the fantasy.
You got endless games going on.
Yeah, come on.
What the hell? Oh, dude, the excuse can't always be, well, the offensive line's not ready. That's why I like the way the Jets are building this thing. It's not about Justin Fields, although we played terrific yesterday. It's about building it the right way, inside out. Let the other pieces then fall into place. Now, they have a great offensive line, and if they did have a younger quarterback, we could maybe eventually be saying, well, you want to have that young quarterback come in and now transition to be the quarterback of the future because they've built the foundation. With the Giants, they've been trying to build the foundation for years. So it can't be, well, the offensive line's not good. It wasn't good enough for Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
So now what? So what? You can't start Jackson Dart until the Giants... Who knows when they're going to find an offensive line?
Well, it's not like the Giants haven't devoted resources here. They just, you know, one guy is amazing. He's injury prone in obviously AT. Neal is a stiff, and they, you know, he was a top 10 pick. So, Listen, I couldn't help but have this thought, and this is a little dispiriting. And again, I walk away with great positivity and feeling good about the start to the Aaron Glenn regime. Excruciating loss aside, I'm watching this game, and every time they ran left or left center, it was something positive. It was much less on the right side, and that's where AVT would have been. And eventually, teams will now stack up and know where they're going to run, and they'll make some adjustments. I don't think it's going to be as easy running the ball the rest of the year as maybe some people think. Now, I think the Jets will be one of the best rushing offenses in football, top 10, but I think yesterday was like a little more than you'll probably see, because that right side, and Membud is a pass protector, no sacks, no pressures, no hurries, nothing. Like, very clean. But in terms of the run, it's not going to be the same as the left side.
And I would say that I would bet more that the passing game is not going to be the same. I don't think Justin Fields will play a game
no,
like that.
No, I agree with that, too. That was almost obvious. That even.
I hope he does, man. He was great yesterday.
He was good. He was good. I liked what I saw.
So what? Are we just hoping to hear something about Jackson Dart? I mean,
I'm very curious what kind of tone he strikes. I really am. I mean, they were pretty bad. And you know that the Dart stuff's coming, whether it's right or wrong. I would not play Jackson Dart in Dallas week two. I'm on the record. I don't even think I'd play in week three or week four. I've got to give this offensive line a chance to gel, if it could, to get Thomas back, if he does. But you know, the number one mission with the Giants and the people who cover them is Jackson Dart. So I think what he says and how he handles it's going to be very revealing.
Did you see the, I was going to say Marash and Marshan Twitter?
I heard about this a little bit.
But it's not about them. It's about what actually happened. So I guess that the Giants reporters wanted to talk to Jackson Dart after the game. And Dart said, sure. And the Giants said, no. You have any issue with that?
I don't. I have no issue with that. Now, I hesitate because in my mind I'm saying, well, he's on the team, through the proper channels, the interview was requested, the player was willing to do it. But let's face it, if I'm the Giants PR and I'm in charge of that at this point, what good will it come, the franchise, to have Jackson Dart out there? Now, I don't think that Jackson Dart would say the wrong thing. I think he's very much on point, and he's a team guy, and I think he gets the deal. But just if he misspeaks or it's twisted, I don't think it's worth it. Now that's also not being very transparent, which I'm against from a journalistic perspective. But in this situation, I'm okay with what the Giants did.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't play yesterday, so I could understand their perspective. Like, he's not the story, but he is, unfortunately, the story for them being there. And I don't give the Giants the benefit of the doubt because I think they try to cover up stuff.
The Giants try to prevent
the storm from happening.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes it worse.
Yep.
It makes it worse. Yep. Like, I didn't need to hear from Jackson Dart yesterday. And I do agree with the Giants that anybody who does want to ask Jackson Dart a question is going to be trying to stir things up. Like, it's way too early for me to be in that conversation. But I've been saying that for weeks. But that's just me. Other people, and I'm sure that if you're a writer or reporter and you pump out a story that has Jackson Dart's name attached to it, it's going to get more clicks. We're talking about Jackson Dart. We didn't lead with it, but obviously he's going to be a big focal point. So I could understand their perspective of wanting to talk to him. I don't know the inner workings of how, like, I've obviously been in plenty of clubhouses and locker rooms, but if a player wants to speak, it's such a unique spot that the player did want to speak, but he's such an irrelevant part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I could understand the Giants wanting to protect him and themselves, but they don't get the benefit of the doubt to me because they do this all the time.
He was inconsequential to the game, but he's not inconsequential to the greater conversation. I mean, you want to tell me that on a third or fourth string tight end, whatever, if they want to talk to him, would they not let him speak if he didn't play? They probably wouldn't care. But let's not be foolish about this. Their number one is to make sure that when he's out there, he's ready and the O-line's buttoned up and he knows the playbook, which of course he will, and they put him in a position to succeed. I'm of the mindset. Now, some people disagree with this, and I respect that. But just for this unique situation, you also have to protect him off the field a little bit. And no matter what he says, I don't think it's going to be a good thing. It might be a neutral thing, but it could be a bad thing because it could be twisted.
I do find it odd, though, that aside from trying to, and dude, look at the media world that we live in. Like, it's ridiculous now. It's not real reporting. It's about sensationalizing topics and clickbaits and headlines and all that stuff. So I do understand that mentality, a reporter thinking, well, I got to get Jackson Dart's comments here because that's going to go nuts. But I also understand that he was irrelevant to the game, and I don't need to hear or read about a quote from Jackson Dart when he didn't get in the game. If he made his NFL debut, there were packages from different story. Hey, how was it to be? Even though you know that wouldn't be the questions, the question is going to be like, when are you going to start? Like, you ready to start?
Mm-hmm.
But it would be about, hey, you made your NFL debut. How'd that feel? He didn't get in the game. I don't think that there was a need to hear from or talk to Jackson Dart. Well, me personally.
I agree. And I think about this, too. Like, say, even if the kid was really trying to play ball and do the right thing, and it seems like he's got that personality where I think that that's what he would be doing. But say if they ask him, you know, hey, although they wouldn't be innocent because it would be a leading question as they actually think about the story in their minds. They're trying to get that juicy quote, which I also understand, as you said, with the clicks. But if it was along the lines of, you know, hey, Jackson, you know, I think a lot of us in the media and a lot of fans thought that the offense would be, you know, a little bit better out of the chute here, and you guys didn't score a touchdown. And he can offer a fairly benign take on the situation, but it could be a little misconstrued, misinterpreted, twisted, where it's almost like an unintentional direct shot at the Giants' offense for not doing anything. So, and that wouldn't be Dart's motivation, but it could be the motivation of others to twist it. So eventually this kid's going to get the ball, and this kid's going to have 20 mics shoved in front of his face. Yesterday was not the day.
It's just such a weird dynamic, though, of not only... See, because the Giants' setup is not a weird dynamic. Having a veteran quarterback come in to start while drafting a younger quarterback that you want to have sitting in the wings, that's not a bad... Like, did the Chiefs... If you were covering the Chiefs years ago, and Alex Smith was the starting quarterback, did they ever go to Patrick Mahomes and ask him for comments afterward? Like, I don't remember that off the top of my mind, but it doesn't seem like that would make sense, does it?
Yeah, no. But Alex Smith was also playing really well. He won 10 or 11 games, some big numbers.
But it's one game.
Yeah, like, no, I know.
It also just shows you, I'm not blaming the reporters and I'm not blaming the Giants. It just shows you where we're at. I do think the Giants try to cover stuff up and then it makes it worse. I just feel like that's their MO, which they shouldn't just do. You got to just be honest. Even Dable, like the way he answers questions. Like, who are you kidding?
Well, that's why I want to hear him today. Yeah. I think it's be very interesting. He's
what
at 1:30.
He's going to say?
I don't know. Here's the thing, though, Sal. Yeah. The questions that they weren't able to ask Jackson Dart yesterday, you know they're coming to the head coach today.
Yeah, he's going
to
shut it down. And
he might, but then if he shuts it down, then now we've got the right to react. Who do you think you are shutting this down? And by the way, the Giants kind of invited this, so let me ask you this. If Jackson Dart was QB3 yesterday rather than QB2.
Yeah, they should have made him QB3.
Do you think that they are asking the Giants PR to interview him?
Probably
I don't.
Probably not.
Can't prove it, but I think common sense would prevail and say no.
But here's why I'll side with the Giants for a second. If Dable comes out today and somebody asks him flat out, when is Jackson Dart going to take over? Is he going to be a starting quarterback? And he says no. It's still going to be like if he says we're not thinking about that right now. Jackson Dart is our number two quarterback. Russell Wilson is our starting quarterback,
which is what he should say.
Okay,
and what he will say.
Okay, they're still he's been saying that, and they're still going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
Like the reporters are still going to say the same thing.
You know how the game works, man. They're going to be chasing that cheese, and now the onus and the impetus is on Dable to make sure that his messaging is consistent, because what he has said from minute one is that Russ is the starter. If he shows any flinch, which I don't think he will, I think he'll handle it fairly well. Maybe
some interpreted it yesterday that he left it open.
I saw that. I didn't. And that was not my interpretation. If there's anything that is counter to what he's been espousing for the last 2 months, I think that that's a little damaging potentially for some people in the locker room. Hey, this is where we're at, man. The Giants have stunk for a while. They moved up to get a kid in the first round. Russell Wilson's a Band-Aid. Jameis Wilson's even less than a Band-Aid. Eventually, the kid's going to play. People want to know when. It's week one. You looked awful. Didn't score a touchdown. Of course the questions are coming, man. What are we, idiots?
Matt is calling from St. Augustine, Florida. What's up, Matty?
Hey, boys. How we doing?
Good.
Hey Matt.
I'm doing well. I called out today. Hey, fellas, I'm watching you on YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, because I took the Steelers -2.5. Mm. I mean, what are you doing going for two, Aaron Glenn? Dude, go for two when you have to go for two. These guys think they're so smart. Hey, can I just say something about Bogish?
I had
a picture. I had a picture in my head of what Andrew Bogish looked like.
Yeah.
Nothing to what I just saw on YouTube.
What did you think he looked like?
Honestly, a geeky boy band, clean-shaven, spiky hair.
Well, you nailed it. That's what it looks like.
He does look like that. Aside from the clean-shaven, I mean, it's pretty spot on.
Hey, Sal, you got the quick hook. You got the Mendy Boone hook. Let me make a hot take on gambling after my Giant take. Couple things. reputations in sports, I'm fascinated about, because certain guys hold on to positive reputations and certain guys don't get the credit they deserve because maybe they're not a household name. Andrew Thomas, okay? Correct me if I'm wrong. His first year, he was a bust.
Okay, yes.
He was not good.
Fair.
Okay. He comes back his second year, and he's solid.
Yes.
Okay. No, fair. All right. And he's been injured ever since.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is this? Like, Andrew, I understand a left tackle. I got you. I feel like the title of Andrew Thomas is more impressive than Andrew Thomas. Second thing.
Matt, I disagree. Only because there's enough tape on Andrew Thomas that when he plays, he's awesome. Period.
That's fine. I'm not a scout. I'm just telling you macro picture.
Yep.
Like, Andrew Thomas has done nothing. If his career ended today, he's a nobody.
Right.
Tight end with the Giants. Okay, Bavaro was a little before my time. I'm born in 82. But Howard Cross was excellent. Kishaki was obviously pretty good. And then, you know, Kevin Boss. Have we had a good tight end since Kevin Boss? I don't think so. Okay? And then the last thing, and again, Sal, hopefully you're getting my gambling hot take. Jackson Dart. I watched the preseason game for the first time in my life in the last 20 years because of Jackson Dart. You know, I'm for these dudes sitting, but I don't know, man. This kid reminds me a little bit physically of Patrick Mahomes. I would actually – Russell Wilson, two Hall of Fame coaches got rid of him. Tomlin and Peyton, arguably the two best coaches in the league. They got rid of him.
Yeah, but the Steelers wanted to keep him. You know that, right?
And also, it's not about that Russell Wilson's going to be the guy. You know he's just a stopgap.
Yeah.
It's just buying time until eventually.
Then put Winston in. Russell Wilson's cooked, bro. He's 5'10". He's done. Okay, maybe when he was.
All right, what's your gambling thing here? Before you. Come on, we gave you 10 minutes here.
Gambling take. We've already had guys that make seven figures get pinched. The pitchers with the Indians, the dude Porter in Toronto. We've already seen it. The guy Malik. Beasley got investigated.
We know.
There is no doubt in my mind, fellas. I've been gambling heavy since 2005. There is no doubt in my mind that these referees who probably get paid $25,000 to $50,000 as a part-time job, if that, they may get paid less. There is no question in my mind these guys are on the take.
Yeah, I mean, hard to argue that. And thanks for the call. Good call, Matt. We appreciate watching on YouTube and listening to the show.
It was a good call.
Hard to... Look, my buddy Vin used to be the biggest conspiracy theorist that there is. Like, this is going back 30 years.
With gambling or with everything?
With everything.
Okay, one of those guys.
Yeah, this guy's on the... Before even gambling became a huge thing, one of those guys.
Uh-huh.
And I used to be like, dude, come on, man. How can I take you seriously? And now, here we are, you know, 35 years later.
Yeah.
Guys are getting nabbed for, you know, fixing games and stuff. Whether it's the referee, whether it's baseball players, football players.
Talking about Donaghy from the NBA?
Yeah, that's
really where it started. Opened their eyes.
I can't really push back. Do I think that all the refs or officials or umps are on the take? No, but if you tell me that some might be.
Well, think about what the Yankees went through last in Houston.
I told you. My initial thought was, this guy's on the take. I didn't even know he was a Red Sox fan.
Yeah.
Watching that game, he was so blatantly bad.
Yeah.
I'm thinking something's up here.
And then he was so brazen. The next night, there was another bad call. It's not like if you are pinched, it's like, oh, this guy's guilty. Like, if I was him, right? The way people, like, you know, screenshot pictures of him and his buddies, Red Sox, I would do everything in my power the next game to try to dispel that and do things favorably for the Yankees
to throw
people off scent. This guy, on a basic exchange with Ryan McMahon, he actually went the other way.
Here's what I would say in summation, a little PSA from SAL. Gamble responsibly. And I would tell you flat out to not gamble. I'm not going to tell you what to do with your life. But as somebody who's been burned before because I have, you know, I got a little bit of an issue. Like, when I'm in, I'm in.
Boy, you said that three times that you had an issue.
I'm just being honest. Like, I don't anymore, luckily.
Yep.
Because of the way I've been able to just curtail it to a certain extent. But it's innate in me. Like, you know.
It's easy to get sucked in.
100%. But I also like doing it. So if you can, if you have the $20 or $50 or $100 or whatever you can afford.
Sure.
And do it responsibly, just know. Like, we talked about our bad beats earlier, whatever. Like, that's par for the course. That happens all the time.
Every week.
you know it. Oh, I was at the casino. And then, yeah, well, what'd you think happened?
Mm-hmm. So six-card 21. Wow, how'd you pull that?
Don't just be, you got to be responsible and know what it is. Like, I never smoked. I never did drugs. My one vice has been gambling. I love the action.
Maybe you got that personality where you shouldn't make sure you never smoke.
Yeah, I know. That's...
Or do some other drugs like Sowerby. I mean, be naked on the corner holding a pipe, you know, and try to get some bookie on the phone with a cell phone that expired. Jesus.
888-808-1019. I love that song. Queen Latifah. 888-808-1019 is the number to call. I don't know how to transition from that into what we played talking about here, BT, but Davy Johnson did pass away this week.
Oh, man. Come on.
We were going to talk about that before he's playing.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, I guess the only way to do it is to just do it, right? Yeah, otherwise, we just keep dancing around this. I saw the news of Davey's passing. I guess that was fairly early Saturday morning, if that sounds right. I'm trying to think when I saw it in my office before the day started. And, you know, when somebody's in their 80s, I mean, it's less sadness. Not that it's ever pure joy, but it's more an acknowledgement that, wow, time's moving fast. Because it seems like yesterday, you know, my dad is a Mets fan, watching the Mets all the time, Channel 9. But really, even candidly enjoying watching those teams with Daryl and Doc and Lenny and all those studs and Keith. It was a hell of a team. They were nuts. They were fun. They were really good. And at the center, they were great one year. And at the center of it all was this guy who had to deal with a three-ring circus. I mean, between the drugs and the fights and the staying out late. And that was I don't know if anybody else could have handled that team, the 86 Mets, really the way Davy Johnson did. And a very good baseball player himself, too, as we know. So, sad.
Yeah, I did not know any different. You know, as a young kid, Davy Johnson's the first guy that you kind of idolize as the manager, right? He's the first leader of the team that I cared about. So I didn't know any better what to compare him to, the weaknesses, the strengths. You'll learn, obviously, a lot the years later. By the way, I did tweet this out, and I would say that I highly recommend. You ever read the book Bats?
No.
It is a must read. It's such a good book.
Bats? Well, it's about
Davy Johnson.
Baseball's analytical trending. Is it an acronym?
I'm not sure if it's an acronym or not. I just remember that was the title of it. So I interviewed Davy Johnson years ago in studio, 2018, down when I was in the minors at WOR. And to prep for that interview, somebody either recommended I read Bats or I just found it on my own. And it got into, you know, the how the Mets became what they became eventually, Davy Johnson and the analytical mind back then. So just there was a lot of insight. And then he had a new book he was in to promote, the My Wild Ride in Baseball and Beyond, which is another book. If you're a Davy Johnson fan, I highly recommend reading it. But my point is that at a young age, I didn't know any better. And then you get older and you learn, you see what he dealt with in New York with the team, with all those egos and personalities and the fighting and this and that, letting those guys be themselves, treated them like adults. All right, I don't care really what you do behind, you know, out late at night, going to club, whatever. As long as between the lines you show up and you get the job done, we're going to be fine. And also being that barrier between Frank Cashin or ownership and the players. So obviously RIP to Davy Johnson, one of the best ever to do it, certainly with the New York Mets, and the last manager to deliver the championship.
That's why he's so important, you know, in New York baseball lore. And let's face it, the Mets were not too far away from having a dynasty like the Yankees had for a minute there. I mean, because if they handled the Dodgers in 1988, and we all know that they were just so much better than that in terms of talent, they were better than that Dodgers team. Like, if they were able to win the championship in 86 like they did, beat the Dodgers and get to the World Series in 88, now, you don't know if they're going to win it, but, and, you know, and maybe even if 87 is not a championship or a deep, deep run, It takes on a little bit of a deeper level if you knock out two versus the one. But when the one is the last one that you had, it definitely elevates Davey to a spot that is rarefied. So it's just a real great baseball life. As I said, a good player. You know, and I didn't really think this because I thought Davey, and I learned this not when he died, but years ago. But I didn't know this when he was managing. I didn't think he was that reliant on the numbers. I didn't think that. He was just like a gut guy.
You know, but there were a lot of...
I know.
He was one of the first. Exactly, right. He was one of the first to do that.
And I guess I didn't really look at it that way. But if you look at the way he wrote the lineup, I mean, you had a Tim Tuffle, Wally Backman platoon at second base. You had the Mookie and the Lenny Dykstra situation. You know, lefty. Obviously, Mookie was also a left-hand switch hitter. But, like, you had that dynamic. So, you know, he bought into it. And it just seemed like... I never met Davey. But he just seemed like a good dude. Rest in peace.
He was great. He let me hold his World Series ring. I was like, what?
I saw that.
Dude, he flung it across the table. I'm sitting there in the suit and I was like, oh, what's that? The 86 championship? He's like, yeah, you want it? Takes it off, flings it across the table. I'm like, oh my God, Davey's all right. Put it on. Now there was a great story that goes afterwards. So Davey was doing the tour,
yep.
I guess, that day. First stop was OR, or at least.
Didn't you text me this?
Yes, I did text
you. Go ahead. Yeah.
So the first stop was, or whatever, my first stop seeing him that day was OR. He came in studio, did the interviews, great. And then I went over to SNY, like I do now, you know, after the radio show, and Davey was there. And apparently he was having some issues getting into the
building.
Yeah, because it's SNY is at like 4 World Trade, so it's...
Oh, this isn't the one when it was still at Rockefeller by Radio City. Down. Okay,
so
new spot.
So it's hard to like get, if you had a car service getting around there, yeah. A lot of the roads are closed off or whatever. Yeah. So by the time he got there, one of the producers, this guy Mark Davis, who's no longer at SNY.
I know Mark Davis.
Yeah, great dude, yeah.
Did he have a goatee for a long time?
Yeah,
I remember Mark, yeah.
Great guy and funny. When Davey Johnson first saw him outside, he goes, are you, and I guess he's frustrated from trying to get in the building. He goes, are you with SNY? Davis goes, yeah.
He thinks he's going to be me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, hey, that's me. Bleep you. It just goes on a rant because he was frustrated with getting it. It was so great.
Lit him up.
Yeah, I had to text Davis. I was like, I would be remiss if I didn't think of you on this sad day of the passing of Davey Johnson. But I think Davey.
Maybe had a couple of pops along the way, too.
I think, yeah.
That's the old school baseball manager
exactly
for you.
Right. Are you surprised with
no.
that? No. By the way, quick note, Brandon Sproat was terrific. Mets 7-for-7 so far in these starts with their rookies. Not win losses.
Fantastic. Now you guys got to start hitting again.
No, I'm just saying,
hit me with the good stats. You lost 2 out of 3 to the Reds. Let's go. You can't hit all of a sudden.
I'm not worried about that. I would be worried about the hitting long term, sure, in the postseason against good pitching. But how about the fact that they go to the minors and call up.
I know.
7 rookie starts, and all 7 have been good. They haven't won all 7.
I thought Tongs was the most impressive.
Yeah.
And Sproat was had no-hitters, we know, but I thought that Tongs was the most impressive. Because
from the weekend, you're saying.
Yeah, he had every reason where things were like pitch count. I think he had 4 walks where it could have gotten ugly, and he could have been hitting the showers very early. He gave the Mets length, and to me that's a sign of, you know, a pitcher who's a little bit beyond his years here. Yeah, I mean, today is a massive football day, clearly. We have another hour to go, but... I mean, we're 18, 19 games to go for both of these teams. And Aaron Judge has not looked the same in right field, but they're pitching. Schlittler was awful on Friday, but the other components were there. You know, take 2 out of 3 against Toronto. You got some good big games coming up. The Mets pitching is really good from the young pitcher's perspective. Suddenly the bats are quiet. Like, tomorrow we're getting into baseball. It'll be a big baseball day.